Mark chapter 10, verses 32 to 45. And they were on the road, going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them. And they were amazed, and those who followed were afraid. And taking the 12 again, he began to tell them what was to happen to him, saying, "See, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him over to the Gentiles. And they will mock him and spit on him and flog him and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise." And James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came up to him and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask you." And he said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory." Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. You are able to drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized." And they said to him, "We are able." And Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, and it is for those for whom it has been prepared." And when the 10 heard it, they began to be indignant of James and John. And Jesus called to him and said to them, "You know that those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. But it shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life for a ransom for many."
And they came to Jericho. And as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a great crowd, Bartimaeus, a blind beggar, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." And many rebuked him, telling him to be quiet. But he cried out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up, he's calling you." And throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. And Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And the blind man said to him, "Rabbi, let me recover my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Go your way, your faith has made you well." And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him on the way. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks, Karen, and thanks, Joan, for reading our Bible readings for us. Keep your Bible open there at Mark chapter 10. That's the passage we're going to be looking at this evening. This is the last in our kind of like run through in Mark's Gospel tonight. And what we've got before us in these passages we've just read together and heard read for us, it just is very, very simple indeed. So no rocket science tonight at all. There are some simple choices that lie before each of us this evening. So I'm going to be pretty simple myself. I want to be thinking about decisions. A couple of Christmases ago, I was given this gadget. It is called the Executive Decision Maker. And it's got all sorts of various possibilities to make your choices, your decisions on. And what one does is you spin the dartboard like that and throw your dart into it like this. So depending on what the choice is, I was given it about the time that we were thinking about doing this church plant and leading it down here. And so there was the choice before me, do we lead this new church and church plant or not? And so this is exactly how it all happened. I threw my dart into the dartboard and read it, and it says, "Eat alone." Thankfully, they give you more than one dart, and you can have another go. It's a great game, that one. Tanya doesn't know why I kept it, but it was for that purpose, just for tonight. Last week we were thinking about choices that we make, and Pete was sharing with us about the choices that lay before King Herod, the king in Israel at the time of Jesus. And someone once said, we are the choices we have made. They are the things as we go through our lives that make us who we are. And like I say, last week we were looking at the choices that faced King Herod. And tonight we look at some other choices of people here in Mark's Gospel. And Mark has been very, very clear indeed. As we read through Mark's Gospel, there are three questions that he seeks to answer. Who is Jesus? Why did Jesus come? And thirdly, what does Jesus demand of us? What did Jesus demand of people then? And before us here in Mark chapter 10, we've got people responding to who Jesus is, why he came, and responding as well to the kind of call that Jesus makes to those people then, and he would make to us sitting here in Springfield School this evening. So Mark chapter 10 and verses 32 through to page 52, page 1020. We see these choices. Let's take a closer look at them. The context of what goes on is there in verses 32 to 34. Just look at those just for a moment. Jesus is leading his disciples and some others towards Jerusalem. That's where he's heading. He's walking that way. And we read that they are astonished and frightened by Jesus' action. Basically, I mean, they're astonished and frightened that he's doing that. Why? Well, Jesus has told them several times already in Mark's Gospel that he is going to be killed. That the religious leaders, the national leaders, the authorities of the day are going to kill him. And strangely enough, they are all based in Jerusalem. That's their headquarters. And so on the one hand, Jesus is saying, the rulers are going to kill me, so let's go to Jerusalem. I don't know if you've read any of the reports on that film that comes out very soon, The Passion, Mel Gibson. I'm going to see it on Wednesday afternoon. I've got two free tickets that church leaders are allowed to see a viewing before anybody else. So if anyone's free on Wednesday afternoon and wants to join me, you'll be very welcome. I might charge you. In all the reports that I've read, it doesn't pick up anything on the fact, and it'll be interesting to see the film, of anything about Jesus' choice to head that way. A lot of the reports I've read says that the film speaks an awful lot about what is done to Jesus, against Jesus, but very little is actually said of his own personal choice. And Jesus chooses to head towards Jerusalem. He heads into the jaws, as it were, of the lion. And that's where he's heading. So that's why the disciples, Jesus' friends and companions, are very concerned. There in verse 33, Jesus says, talks about his death again. See, we're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man, that title that Jesus uses of himself, it's an ancient title about the Messiah, God's King, will be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him over to the Gentiles, to the Romans, basically. They will mock him and spit on him and flog him and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise again. So there he is saying it is again. He's going to be condemned to death by the religious leaders and handed over to the Roman leaders. And they will do those things to him there in the capital city. And it's against that background. That's the backdrop. That's the context of this little conversation that happens next. And with that context in mind, what happens next, it's weird. It's breathtakingly inappropriate by two of Jesus' closest friends. You see, James and John, they come and they make this request of Jesus that is just simply breathtaking. He's heading towards Jerusalem where he's going to die. And they come along and they ask him this question. They say there in verses 35 to 37, let me read it. This is my first point this evening, the disciples' choice. verses 35 to 37. James and John, the sons of Zebedee. Those of us who remember the magic roundabout find it very hard to read that without... Apparently they're going to reintroduce the magic roundabout again. Apparently it's going to, they're going to make a film of it or something like that I was reading. Sorry, what was that, Andy? Perhaps we can view that with your little group that are getting together to look at films together. So here we are, James and John. Zebedee was actually probably quite a wealthy businessman and had a fishing business. So James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came up to him and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory." Now that is astonishing, isn't it? Jesus says, "I'm going to die," and they come along and say, "When you come into your kingdom, we want to, when you're there in Buckingham Palace, you know, John, I like number 10 Downing Street," and James here is looking at having number 11, if that's all right with you. It really is astonishing. As perverse as this seems after what Jesus has just taught about his disciples, we shouldn't actually be surprised. It's not the first time the disciples actually behave like this. If you take a little bit of time, some moment, perhaps later on this evening or later on in the week, you look at chapter 9. Jesus says that he's going to be betrayed and killed back in chapter 9. And what's the disciples' response in that situation? Well, do they go about weeping and mourning and saying, "Our friend, our beloved leader is going to die"? No. They start arguing with each other over who is the greatest. Jesus' response then in chapter 9 is the same as it here is in chapter 10. He teaches them. It's interesting, isn't it, that James and John actually come to him and say, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we..." They've obviously not been listening to anything he's been teaching. "Oh, teacher." But they've not been taking it on board. They are blind, aren't they? They've not heard. They've not taken on board what Jesus has been teaching them. But again, Jesus teaches them in this situation, following on from the request. Jesus knows that James and John are missing the point. And so there in verse 38, he takes them aside and he says, "You do not know what you are asking. You don't know what you're talking about. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" In the Old Testament, the old section of the Bible, the first section of the Bible, the cup is often, it's a phrase generally used to refer to God's anger, God's wrath, the cup of God's wrath. And baptism goes along the same sort of lines as well, the same similar sort of meaning. So what Jesus is saying to James and John is basically, can you do what I'm about to do, or what I will do? Can you bear the punishment that sin deserves? Can you bear God's judgment and save others by doing so? And of course, they can't. Like you and me, they need to be saved themselves from God's anger and God's judgment. As Jesus said, they don't know what they're asking for. They really don't know what they're talking about. Unfortunately, James and John want glory. They don't see Jesus' death as necessary. They anticipate that when Jesus' kingdom is established, there will be an unholy scramble for the best seats in the house. And they think, well, if we better get our reservations in now. Yeah, a bit like on the beach or being on holiday somewhere, and the swimming pool, and other folks have got their towel there first when you come down in the morning. But yeah, that's what they're doing. They're looking for the best seats, and the prudent thing is to get your reservation in now. They were go-getters, they were status seekers, they were very ambitious. They're hungry for fame, hungry for fortune. Suffering and death? Didn't come into it. Now, that's not what they're for. That's not what they're looking at. I suppose you can imagine them, that they've gone to follow this Jesus. A humble guy and not really much about him. Very limited wealth and all the rest of it. And perhaps they've left Zebedee's house and they've left the servants there. But really their heart instinct to live the life that perhaps they'd had back at home is still there, beating away. And that's what they're after. And if we think that's what's going on around us today, then really we see, well, we see our own hearts, don't we? We see the hearts of people, the world around us reflected in James and John and their attitudes. And we look around us and we see this lust for power is there in politics, isn't it? It's there in public life, it's there in business, it's there in industry, it's there in the place where you work, it's there in the medical profession, it's there in the legal profession, it's there in sports, it's there in arts. It's there in the church. Well and truly there in the church. It's right there, right through society, right through human culture. And we see it all around us and we see it in our own hearts. It's striking as well, the other disciples, they turn up and they find out what James and John have been talking about with Jesus. And we're told, aren't we, that they are indignant, verse 41. And when the ten heard it, they began to be indignant at James and John. And we kind of think to ourselves, is it because they're really uptight that James and John haven't seen who Jesus is? Or is it they're uptight that, hang on, James and John have got in ahead of us with the request? It's probably the latter, isn't it? You know, why didn't I think of that, says Peter. Could have had my reservation in there before them. You know, James and John, like all of Jesus Christ's followers since, are called not to embark on some sort of power trip seeking prestige or status. Instead, those who follow Jesus Christ should follow the example of our King, the Lord Jesus Christ. Verse 45, Jesus basically tells them to be slaves of other people. For even the Son of Man, Jesus himself, came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. You see, Jesus used all his power to serve. And that's the biggest contrast between James and John and Jesus. Now, the last thing on their mind when they made the request is service and being a slave of other people and treating other people better than yourself. The last thing. By contrast, Jesus goes all the way to the cross. And he doesn't seek his own glory, but instead, in his concern for others, he's walking deliberately into the jaws of death, isn't he? Towards Jerusalem, towards pain, towards humiliation. He only wants to serve. He chooses a cross, not a throne, a crown of thorns, not a crown of gold. And Jesus turns things right upside down, doesn't he, in the way that we normally think, the way that we think in our own lives. Verse 43, but it shall not be among you, but whoever would be great among you must be your servant. And Jesus, that's true for Jesus. For those that would follow him, it's true for us too. And none of us are greater than our master. So that's the choice that faced these two disciples. Are you going to be a servant? And that's the choice that faces us tonight. If we are to follow Jesus Christ, and we just sung that song, I want to see you, Jesus. If we want to see him clearly, we don't just understand who he is and why he came. We've got to understand and see what he calls us to be. Now, are we up for making that choice? So that's the disciples' choice. The second choice here is from Bartimaeus. Verses 46 to 52. They came to Jericho, and as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a great crowd, Bartimaeus, a blind beggar, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. And many rebuked him, telling him to be silent, but he cried out all the more, son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stopped and said, call him. And they called the blind man, saying to him, take heart, get up, he's calling you. And throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. And Jesus said to him, what do you want me to do for you? Same question he'd asked James and John. And the blind man said, Rabbi, let me recover my sight. And Jesus said to him, go your way, your faith has made you well. And immediately recovered his sight and followed him on the way. See, Bartimaeus, he's different from the other disciples in quite a few different ways. In verse 47, he recognizes that Jesus is the son of David. That's what he calls him. He recognizes that he's the son of David, was the great king of the Old Testament. He was the Messiah. Messiah means anointed one. And David, the great king, was anointed by Samuel the prophet. And as they look forward to this great Messiah to come throughout the Old Testament, they're looking for the son of David, the next anointed one. And that is Jesus. So this Bartimaeus, he acknowledges that Jesus is God's king. And that's a contrast there with just simply crying out and talking to him as teacher, which is what James and John do. Then in verse 51, rather than addressing Jesus teacher, like I say, he goes on and he actually calls Jesus rabbi, which actually is much closer to the word master. And so there's a lot more humility coming on with Bartimaeus compared to James and John. And Mark, as he writes these down, you can imagine Mark in his desk where he's putting together his gospel. And he's thinking, I'm trying to make a point about who Jesus is and what it means to follow him here. And he's rustling through and he says, if we tell people exactly what happened to James and John and put in what happened to Bartimaeus as well, then people see the contrast. They call us to be like Bartimaeus, to say, Master, you are my master. I call you that. And he says, Master, I want to see. And there's an irony that goes on. It's interesting to read Mark's gospel. Some of us were looking at it this morning. Just to be asking the questions as we read through Mark's gospel, who is blind to who Jesus is and who can see? And there's a big irony going on here because James and John, who've been following Jesus, are blind, although they can see. Bartimaeus, although he can't see, can see. He says to Jesus that he wants to see. He wants to see physically. Notice that while the disciples wanted Jesus to do whatever they asked, Bartimaeus simply says, I want mercy. It's a striking contrast, isn't it? He's humbly dependent upon Jesus. In other words, he recognizes that he basically deserves nothing. He deserves nothing for Jesus. Verse 48, have mercy on me. That's a pitiful cry, isn't it? It's a very dependent cry. Have mercy on me. So we see the difference between Bartimaeus and James and John. Bartimaeus is not for the power and status, but for mercy. Even when people tell him to be quiet, he keeps asking. This blind man sees who Jesus is and what it really means to follow him, in contrast to James and John, who are spiritually blind. And so Jesus welcomes Bartimaeus, calls him, asks him the question, what do you want me to do for you, there in verse 51. And notice while James and John are rebuked by Jesus Christ, then basically Bartimaeus, the great contrast, he's healed there in verse 52. Jesus said to him, go your way, your faith has made you well. And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him on his way. Basically, it could be read more literally, verse 52, your faith has saved you. Your faith has saved you. He sends him on his way. So James and John, they ask for status and receive a rebuke. And Bartimaeus asked for mercy and he's saved. I told you it's not rocket science. That's a simple choice we have before us this evening. As we think about who Jesus is. As we've been reading through Mark's gospel, we discover that Mark wants to inform us and tell us that Jesus is God's king. With God's authority. God's power. That's who he is. And why did he come? He came to die. So that sinful people like you and me could be forgiven. To take God's wrath upon himself. So that we could be rescued. So that we could be forgiven. The call is, the call to follow him is to basically walk in his footsteps. And that's the choice that faces us this evening. Are we going to follow Jesus Christ? Are we going to see him for who he is? Or are we going to carry on with our own way, wanting ourselves to be in control of our lives, with whatever self-centered interests we have, which pan out in our lives that may be the same as in James and John, but it may be different, but what it comes down to is it's me in control. You see, if you are someone here tonight who has put your trust in Jesus Christ, you know you are a Christian, you follow Jesus, you've trusted Jesus for your forgiveness, then you may need to learn the lesson that James and John learned, that following Jesus Christ is about service, not about status. Some I know, I mean, just starting out in careers in medicine and law and as teachers, and the pressure out there is going to always be go for the status. I was at a party the other day, 40th birthday party with a friend of mine who's 40. I've got friends who are that age. Just talking to a couple of doctors and in that party, and they were sort of saying, well, it's good to be known as the doctor or the mister, because they'd be beyond that. And they said, well, do I call myself Reverend? I said, well, I'd rather not, really. I suppose you see the choice. Maybe as a reverend's rather a naff thing, isn't it? I suppose it's easy to give up. But we need to learn that if we're going to follow Jesus Christ, it's about service, not status. And I'm thinking of ourselves, those of us who've left Christchurch Forward and came to start this church primarily. Others can listen in as well to this. You see, that we've put an awful lot of effort into getting this church up and running. There have been people who work their socks off. There's something good about doing that for the first few weeks, isn't there? You know, being really a willing servant. You know, and I like doing it in the limelight, you know, other people see my service. And really the call for us is to carry on having a servant spirit in the months ahead, you know, putting out the chairs each week and coming in to do that, coming on time to welcome other people who may be their first time here, serving tea, serving coffee, baking cakes, putting out the music, clearing the music away. I mean, that's a really big bind, isn't it? We're in it for the long term. Really the call for us is to carry on being servants towards one another and big-hearted servants towards other people that come in, welcoming them, making them feel a part of the family here. So there's no sense of, there's an in-group that came from Fulwood and I'm not quite in it yet. I mean, I pray that doesn't happen. Goodness me. But what will lead to that is a servant heart and a servant spirit. It may be as well that perhaps you are someone who's yet to put your trust in the Lord Jesus Christ. You may have been coming here for some time since we've started this new church. You may be here for the first time tonight. It may well be that you just need to take time to read Mark's Gospel and to just get acquainted with who Jesus is again and why he came. And I want to encourage you to do that. And to get alongside a friend and who you do know is a Christian and say, would you read Mark's Gospel with me? You know, just read a section with me each week and allow me to ask you any question I want, because I want to understand, but I've got a lot of questions. So it may be something that others of us here need to do tonight. But it may be others who've been coming you've been reading Mark's Gospel with us week by week, and you understand who Jesus is, you know why he came, simply perhaps for you tonight it's the call really is to follow the example of Bartimaeus and say, well, Jesus, have mercy on me. It may well be that you're not quite there yet, and yeah, there's still the penny's got to drop, and it was just great hearing what Sarah had to say earlier on, say that it was like someone switching on a light. We can't really switch that light on ourselves. God has to help. I mean, that's one of the great imagery that's coming through with Bartimaeus, is Jesus turns the light on for him. And it may well be that tonight you just need to simply pray, have mercy on me, open my spiritually blind eyes, Jesus, please, so that I see you for who you are that I understand why you came for me, so I could be forgiven, and so that my eyes are opened and that I actually do follow your call, which is actually the way of being a servant. So who do you identify with, James and John or Bartimaeus?